That's the Ramsey Lewis Trio with The In Crowd. Those of a certain age would recall that. It was recorded live in 1965 at the legendary Bohemian Caverns Jazz Nightclub in Washington, D.C. It was Ramsey Lewis's biggest hit that year, reaching the top of the Billboard R&B charts and number two on the top 200 albums for 1965. It received a Grammy in 1966 for Best Jazz Instrumental. And the single was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2009. Ramsey Lewis, of course, is on piano, L.D. Young on bass and cello, and Isaac Red Holt on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It is Friday, February the 6th. Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. And you know what the deal is. You make your call at 888-874-4888, and we get your take on major stories and events of the week, and even about things that you would like to present for further discussion and debate. And you know, we really do cherish, we have a great deep respect and appreciation for off the beaten path thinking and analysis here on this program. So we're always ready to receive that. And of course, new voices that we haven't heard before. Now, here's a little logistical issue. Just as I was going on air, we had a technical problem. I hope it's only on my end. I'm sure it is only on my end. But the Internet just decided it didn't like me, and it threw me off. Everything was set and ready to go, but it just did not take. So I'm doing the program by phone today, and so I will have to be a bit imaginative about knowing when you're calling, so we will proceed that way. All right. But I will get to you, and we will continue our program. It's just about a way of making sure that your brain cells keep, you know, fluid and keep performing when these things happen. Technology is tricky that way. 888-874-4888. All right. So we will start with that. Let's take this short music break. I'm going to set my, as far as I can manage on my end, we'll do that and see how we can communicate with the studio and see how we can communicate with respect to who's on the line and where you're calling from. All right, just a little bit, and we will get back to the program right after this. Well, you know, technology may have its thing, but the studio has its thing, too. We have very good engineers, and so I'm able to do this. All right, from Chicago, it is Henry. Hello, Henry.
Hey, how you doing, Utrice?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing out there in Chicago?
Oh, boy, it's getting close to 0 degrees out here, so we're getting a cold spell.
Well, I did a little story yesterday about your town and Jesse Jackson and the Little League baseball scenario.
Yes, and it's interesting you said that because that's what I was calling for. Well, you know, I have very close ties to this because the neighborhood that Jackie Robinson West was is in is the neighborhood I grew up in.
So, all right, before you, could you do us a little favor, Henry, and I have to ask you to use your journalist hat here. Give us a little context about the story that you're about to talk about.
Okay, and actually, yeah, that was the context. I wanted to do that as well. Well, apparently what happened is Jackie Robinson West the other day was stripped of their Little League U.S. title because of fraudulent paperwork, according to Little League International, that was submitted by the Jackie Robinson West district. So what happened, what they found out was every little league district within the city area or anywhere, they have a map where they can recruit players from. So what happened was Jackie Robinson West back in the beginning of the season, submitted a fraudulent map, because what happened was what you can do as a district is you can actually recruit other players from other districts. However, the other districts did not sign off on it. So basically the map was invalid, and Jackie Robinson West was recruiting players from districts they didn't have approval for. So that was the whole discrepancy, because there were players on their team that was from other districts that the district president didn't sign off on. So that's the basis of the story behind why they were stripped of the title. But I wanted to comment on that because, like I said, I grew up in that neighborhood. I didn't play on Jackie Robinson West, but I know people who have. I know coaches who coached in the Jackie Robinson West. I actually personally know Joseph Haley, who was the founder of Jackie Robinson West. All the people in the neighborhood call him Mr. Haley. But the thing is that, and I know yesterday you were talking about, you know, Jesse Jackson and the accusation of racism. I'm going to say this because there is a racial element to this, but not the way people think it is, and definitely not the way Jesse Jackson thinks it. But I'm going to get to that in a second. But the thing, the problem I have with this story is the fact that it wasn't about the ruling, because I agree, if they broke rules, then that's fine. They need to be stripped of the title. However, I just didn't like the way it was presented and the way it was dealt with, because we all know that there's no shame on the children. All the adults are the key factors in this one. But the problem is that I think the blame only seems to center around people in the Jackie Robinson West District, which I disagree, because this is complicit amongst the entire area. Little League Baseball in Chicago, I'm pretty sure you can find violations on almost every Little League team. Now, it doesn't make anything right for what Jackie Robinson West did. However, I find it to be selective enforcement, if you want to call it that, because I think the rules only apply if you win the championship. Because I just feel that this wouldn't have happened if Jackie Robinson West wouldn't have won the title. And but that's not the racial factor that I'm seeing here, because I honestly, like I said, I just don't think that this would have been happening if they would have lost to Nevada. Because here's the thing, and I was just talking a few seconds ago about the district and remapping, because it has to be approved by the other district president. Well, Little League International stated in their statement yesterday that when they submitted the district maps, none of the presidents within the districts had challenged or alleged allegations of illegal players on their team. So I'm wondering, why did nobody say anything? Because over the past couple of days, you had people in the local Chicago area coming out the woodwork saying, oh, there's been cheating with them for years. Well, why hasn't nobody said anything? And the problem I have is, why is it that now it's a key issue? Because The problem is, and here's another thing, Yatri. The presidents, they interviewed the other presidents of the local districts that surround Jackie Robinson. That, you know, they got the alleged players, got the players on their team. They asked them why they did not report them when they knew that they were taking players out of the district. And do you know what one of the presidents said? They said, what? Well, we didn't want to shake any waves because we thought it was a good story. So I'm like, okay, if you knew something was going on, why didn't you say it before all this happened? They get their maps. They get all the paperwork in February. This is months before the season even starts. So I just have a problem with that because I think the system of Little League itself is corrupt. And another thing, what brought this all about was the Little League district president of the Evergreen Park. Evergreen Park is a suburb of Chicago, had filed a report on GRW's illegal players. Well, come to find out that he has two players on the team that were ineligible to play, but nobody is suspending him. Nobody is telling that his team can't play next year in the tournament. So I just don't get this selective enforcement and all this integrity of the game, because Little League itself is corrupt. And the biggest problem I have with it is the kids become the victims of this.
I agree with everything that you say. I have no dispute with anything you say, and you make a good case.
And
selective enforcement and the rampant allegations of mismanagement and illegalities within the league, all these things notwithstanding, the fact is, and you said it at the beginning, it appears that they committed violations here. Now, you can't pick and choose when you are in the wrong as to how you are to be punished or if you are to be punished. It's like, you know, when you get caught for speeding, and the typical thing that you would be inclined to say is, well, look, that guy in front of me was speeding. Yeah, but you're the one who got caught.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, we have to ask about this reaction. What concerned me with all of this going on is Jesse Jackson getting out there and talking about this is racism. And it isn't. It is on the level that you're talking about, but it isn't in the specific instance. It was about however they did it, whether they did it well or didn't do it well, whether they, you know, the timing was wrong, whether they, you know, they were clumsy in the way they did it and so forth. The fact is, the organization, corrupt as it might be, racist even as it might be, chose nonetheless at that moment to exercise its authority this way. And the way to exercise the authority was to take back the championship because of the specific charges about the violations of the maps and recruiting players.
Yeah. Well, and Utrecht, I want to also, last thing, I want to talk about the racial angle that I think is prevalent in this case, because
correct. I see no room to argue with your position.
Like I said, here's the racial aspect that I think I see in this. There is a parallel story to this. Same season, a Georgia team, a Little League Georgia team, I think it's called Peachtree or Peach View, something like that, that's in somewhere in southern Georgia. That Little League team won their state within the Little League tournament. So what happened was, before they went into the Nationals, they were told that they had violations of having too many 12-year-olds on their team. So they had to forfeit their championship as well. Now, here's the thing about it. That was reported back in August, all right? What I saw in the AP reports and in the Georgia reports, and I'm telling you, Richard, I Googled their name, and I also Googled cheating and everything. I could not find one word that said cheating with their team.
But Jackson didn't come out and say cheating is pervasive. He didn't come out. He didn't defend his position on the basis that the whole system is corrupt. He didn't point out to the fact that other things are happening, other people are cheating. That's not his thing. Was it's racism? Period.
No. And I agree with you, but what I'm saying is that he missed the angle of racism totally, because I think it was racist how they reported it, because when they initially reported this, Utrecht, in the local papers, all I saw was the word cheating and cheating and cheating. But right. When they reported this with the Little League team in Georgia, who basically violated rules as well, I saw no word cheating in any of their reports.
Well, this is my point. When you're a leader and you take the position of leadership, and I understand the Jackson's from Chicago. This is a real huge story in the African-American community, because there was a lot of joy associated with this team and what they had accomplished, and their kids did spectacularly well. But here is also a moment where the question has to be raised about how they won and whether that is consistent with the history of Jackie Robinson, whether it is consistent with the history of the people we admire, the African Americans who paved the way in sports on the basis of integrity, whether it is consistent with their obligation, the adults. Not the kids. The kids were superlative. But the adults were the corrupt ones. And we need to deal with that, because that is a story that is also pervasive within the African-American community. It doesn't matter to me who else is guilty, who else is corrupt. It matters to me that in this instance, the having been found to have violated the rules, which, again, my thing is right within the boundaries of how Jackie Robinson, whose name they have put on this team, he would never have done something like that. He would never have thought that this was a good way to win. He would never have countenanced cheating. And to propose that people defend a wrong position as a civil rights leader, you got to be kidding. And we have to say, no, this is inconsistent with our history. Forget what the rest of the world is doing. I don't care what kind of cheating is going on. But when you put a man's name and his entire life's work and his legacy on the name of a team, and you don't in every single way honor that, and you have the nerve, once people catch you doing something wrong, to still come out and talk about racism, now you'll offend me twice. That's my point. We should have a different standard. I don't care if the rest of the world is corrupt. I don't care what they're doing. We have to have a standard. You see, that's my point. And when you are a civil rights leader and you start screaming racism every time something happens and you ignore the fact your own responsibility, the responsibility of the adults who chose not to do the right thing. And we have two things working here. Not only the impugning, I'm just livid about the fact that, I mean, if this team were called the Joe Schmo team, it wouldn't bother me. But don't call this team the Jackie Robinson team, and this is the way y'all are behaving. Forget it.
And you know what, Utrecht? I totally agree with you, but I just think it goes far beyond Jackie Robinson. Little League International's thing is integrity, and I don't think there's any integrity.
Oh, come
in
on,
that
where
organization.
Is that? But let's be real. Where? Which national organization do you know that is full of integrity? Which one?
Give me a week.
You know what I mean? Which one is full of integrity? They're not. None of them are full of integrity. But we have this a piece of business, and it's very symbolic for us as African Americans, really, because this is also epitomizing the accommodation that we have made and continue to make in the name of progress. We forget and we trample on the things that are of greater value to us, which are things like integrity and honesty and honor. These are very, very important things. I don't care what these other stuff about, you know, the minute details of who, you know, was able to get away with this and who was not. The fact that the Jesse Jackson and others are making the argument today that we are, in effect, as entitled to be corrupt as white people are, that doesn't make sense to me.
And you know what? You're right. You're right. I never took a position where I said that they're wrong, you know, and they should give back the championship. I'm just saying that, you know, this goes beyond different levels. And one more thing I want to talk about, these politicians that took photo ops with this team.
You get your money's worth today, Henry.
Where are they at? Now, Rahm Emanuel came out and said, I said the same thing. And it was basically because, you know, the mayoral election is 2 weeks away. He claimed he called the Little League International president to ask to reverse the decision, and he blatantly told him, no, I'm not doing it. And I was actually glad he said no to me.
Well, once again, we will see that even in this situation, African Americans afford white America and all of America an opportunity once again to redeem themselves. So, but this is really bad on this level. Really, I can't move beyond this particular level. That the name of Jackie Robinson and nobody. I mean, it is not even. It's just a technical matter, really. Nobody's even discussing the dishonor to this man's name and legacy and basically, this is a shared history among African Americans in particular.
And what's worse is that we basically failed the children who performed very well.
That's the whole point. You know, the adults are always pointing to young people doing this and young people are doing, look at the situation. You couldn't have asked for a more perfect performance than from these young boys. They were fantastic. They did their job superlatively. In every way, they exceeded expectation. And look what they have to work with. Well, you got your money's worth today, Henry, from Chicago. You stood up for Chicago today, and I tried.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. We go next to New York. Allie from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Idris. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, and hello to all those people listening right now. And I just wanted to say, where is Harvey? Because I always expected to begin with Harvey, but we haven't heard from Harvey for the last
week.
We haven't
heard from Harvey, yes.
Yeah.
Giving others a room. I'm making room.
Yes,
because
he's
quantangled with us, just to say.
Yes, yes. I have two comments. One is about Brian Williams, but before, my first comment is going to be about the Little League. As you know, in New York, there were two incidents where the championship team here for the state, they went to the national, and one of them was taken down because one of the kids was overage. But I do have to tell you that in that incident, Henry's right. They do look into the incidents when they go to the national, when they win the championship. That's the time. But I will have to say that in New York, because my son at that time was playing Little League twice with the two incidents, the buzz was, and one of them was that there was an overage kid in the team. So people knew, even the kids, okay? And that one, when they won the national, when they won the state and they went to the national, the team that they beat, the state team that they beat in Connecticut, they went to the Dominican Republic. They sent a detective to find out about this kid's age. Okay, that was the beginning. The other incident was with a Harlem Little League. And that one, I could tell you, because six of the kids, they were playing with my son in an independent league, and they were playing Little League at the same time. Even the kids among themselves, they were talking about these four kids, that they didn't live in Manhattan. They lived in the Bronx. So even the kids knew that these kids, they weren't supposed to be with that team. When we went to Harlem with one of the Little League to play, one of the Harlem team, some of the parents, they were very upset, because one of the things that you didn't talk about yesterday or today with Henry is that they take the spot from kids that they live in the area that they qualify, because they're being cut off from the roster. A lot of these parents in Harlem, because the buzz was that they would be probably going to the National because the team was very good, they were very, very upset. And finally, when I was on vacation, but when they got to the Nationals, somebody called up the Little League and told them about these kids that they didn't live in Manhattan. They live in the Bronx. And we knew. And all the kids knew. My son knew. Everybody knew. And the people in Harlem were very, a lot of the parents, they were very upset. Because it is true, you take a spot that belongs to one of those kids in Harlem, that they qualify. So that's what I wanted to say. And the father and the one of the coaches who was the father of one of these kids, he actually was the one who recruited these kids. So he knew all along that these kids, they belong in the Bronx. So that's what I wanted to say. But going back to Brian Williams, and people are surprised that Brian Williams, he lied. The fact of the matter is that we went and destroyed a country, Iraq, with a big lie. The number one channel around this nation that people listen to, not all of us, is Fox News. They always, their rating is number one. And what do they talk about? Things that are not true. And then you go on and on. Chelsea Manning is spending all this year in prison. Why? Because he told the truth. Any whistleblower, Carriaco, he is that man is in jail because he told the truth. Any whistleblower now will go to jail. So what do we expect from these people that we see on TV? That the whole thing is that when you lie in this country, you get ahead. But when you tell the truth and you become a whistleblower, the government makes sure that they put you in jail. Dick Cheney said, I will do it all over again, meaning with the big lie, he will do it all over again and invade Iraq. So what can we expect? Condoleezza Rice, she's a professor at one of the supposedly best universities in this country. And she went to where? I believe Meet the Press with her lies. So this, what else can we expect about Brian Williams? He just one of the small who was cut. And like you said, I think it was you who said, he took what? People in the army, and they brought out this lie that he was talking about. And probably wasn't only just one. Probably was a bunch of them that he used to talk about on Channel 4 on NBC. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your call today. From New York, Jay, you're on the air.
Hello, Nutrice. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
Good. Listen, I just want to call in to give you praise for what you do. I had an opportunity last Saturday to see the Melissa Harris Perry show. And they were speaking about what was going on in Detroit. And the level of conversation and discourse on a major cable network was not even one-tenth of the analysis that you do in regards to what's going on in Detroit. And, you know, I would just hope at some point in time more people will get the opportunity to listen to the work that you have done and the people that you have brought in in regards to Detroit, because it is just absolutely phenomenal. And to see the type of spin and excuses that these people on these cable networks put on in regards to what's going on in not only this country and the world is appalling. It just happened again this week in regards to Neanderthal that killed the three Islamic young people in North Carolina. How that wasn't even a breaking news story or anything of real journalistic value. Whereas if it was the reverse, a Muslim killing three Neanderthals, then it would have been
bigger. Don't say Neanderthals.
I'll correct and I'll say three white people. It would be totally treated differently. And I just have to say, I'm totally disappointed in the way that our people are so hooked into that form of mis-media. But I also want to praise you for what you do. I mean, I would just hope at some point in time people really understand the excellence of what you do. And I'll leave it with this. As you listen and you watch these cable shows and these news shows, you notice that they never have the greatness that you have on your show, like a Dr. Gerald Horn. Imagine Gerald Horn being on one of those shows giving an analysis on what's going on in this world. So that's why I really want to praise you, and I want to say thank you, because you deserve it, sister, because your excellence has been at a top level ever since I became acquainted with you with the City Sun many, many years ago. And you see what has happened to most of the people that have worked at the City Sun and wrote at the City Sun under your leadership, man. They should have been household names by now, especially the great, I think it was Clayton Cox. I think that was his name.
Clinton Cox,
in the phenomenal work that he did. So, I just want to keep on praising you because you deserve it, sister. You really don't. And don't take it as a joke or be shy or bright or nothing like that.
It's very, you deserve a lot of love,
sister.
Well, thank you very much, Jay. I sincerely appreciate your thoughts today, and I thank you for them. And I will say, too, that, you know, it's kind of, to me, it's a little embarrassing. But you know what I mean. It's wonderful to hear, and all the more so because I believe it to be heartfelt and sincere. So thank you so very much for that today. And it gives me an extra jolt, an extra boost to keep on keeping on, as they say. Thank you so
much.
All right, bye-bye. From California, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. And what's life like out there on the left coast?
Oh, we're just laid back as usual out here, soaking up some sunshine. I don't mean to make you jealous or anything.
Yeah, so, I am, too.
I wanted to tell you, first of all, teacher. I call you teacher because we learned so much from you. And I've listened to you since you started with TRN. And I have to say the thing that I like most about you is your integrity when it comes to journalism and your insight when you're analyzing things. So
thank you.
I'm not trying to compete with Jay for teacher's pet.
But
I'm not trying to compete for teacher's pet, but I do really mean it. So.
No, this is not, you know, I feel like I have to check. Did I die or something? What's going on?
And the other great thing about your show in general is that you give us, the listeners, a chance to contribute and share ideas, and I really love that.
I love that most of all. I really do, because, you know, for years in doing radio, I've always insisted that this is education, and education
right.
is everybody. Everybody has something to put into the pot. And when we listen, and that's the greatest skill to develop, is to listen to what people are saying, because there's some profound knowledge being exchanged if only we
right.
take the time to listen. So I'm
and
listening. What have you to say today?
And we all can learn from each other. So
that's the whole point.
The callers ahead of me today all talked about separate issues, but they're all connected. The nature of not only business in this country, but the media, but and also even down to Little League, down to that level, is starting to be exposed. And what I'm saying by that is rampant corruption exists in this country in just about every endeavor and every field that you can imagine, really. As Allie pointed out, you know, about the and Henry about Little League. I mean, you could probably go anywhere in this country, any city, and find the same thing. And not only that, I pointed out in a conversation a few days ago, actually yesterday, with Henry that. It even goes up to, you know, high school and college, because you hear about these players in college accepting gifts and not having the grades to get into certain colleges, and they finagle the system. Well, they don't, but their representatives and all this other stuff. And, you know, the culture of corruption in this country extends. You know, let's take the Brian Williams situation. Now, I've called in on this show a lot, and about, I would say, 5 or 6 times, I've stated this. Get rid of that TV, because it's lies all day long. Just lies. That's all they do. They're paid liars. Now, in the last few days, it's come out that Brian Williams has lied about a few other things. Oh, surprise, surprise. You know, for one thing, he said when he was covering the New Orleans, the hurricane mm-hmm. aftermath, he said that he was, I believe he was in the 5th Ward or something.
It was a pretty swank hotel in
right.
the French Quarter, yes.
The French Quarter, right. He said that he saw bodies floating by, and he had to get a group of men to protect him and his crew, and he was afraid he was going to get carjacked and all this nonsense, which he did not report at the time. He said all this later. And it comes out that that's not even true, because the French Quarter, I don't think, was even hit with the water in a major way. So that shows that he lies all the time. You know, and there's a couple of other little things that people are pointing out he lied about, but not only him, all of these people lie. And as Allie pointed out, the biggest liar station of them all is Fox News. And that's where the majority of Americans get their information from. So is it any wonder that the public is so uninformed, but more misinformed about everything under the sun? And this, too, carries over into industry and business. as well. I have been a business owner since 1997. I incorporated in 2002. I have intentionally stayed small. I only have somewhere between 3 and 7 employees. I've intentionally stayed small. I could have gotten larger, but I don't want to because there's certain things about business in this country. I like to tell people like this and give an example. I estimate that about 90 to 95% of businesses in this country do corrupt practices or are corrupt totally. I like to give one good example. We all pay bills, you know, utility bills, bills for your car, bills for your house, mortgage, whatever. I know everyone out there has probably been double billed before. What that is when you pay your payment for the month, if they happen to get your payment a couple of days or a few days before the next statement, they'll go ahead and put the old balance on with the new balance and just send it to you. Now, they know not everybody is going to sit there and say, well, I'm just going to go ahead and pay this again. But there's a certain percentage of people who will. And so what they do this very much on purpose. It's not an accident. They do it on purpose. And so they know that 15, maybe 20%, not even that high, maybe 5% of people are going to just pay it because a lot of people don't read. They just send the check. So what they do with that money, all this excess money they get, is they put it into their account or escrow or something like that, an escrow account, and it gains interest for them. And if you never say anything about it, that money is theirs. If you never catch the error, but if you catch the error, they're going to immediately give it back to you. But if you don't catch the error, they keep your money. Now, this is a common practice in business in this country. So I'm going to get off so I can let some people have on.
It's pervasive is what you're saying. Corruption is pervasive.
Point, right.
All right. You've proved your point.
Corruption.
Thank you, DX.
Okay, thank you, and have a great weekend.
Thanks for your call today. From North Carolina, Elijah, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing, you Trees Lee?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Two things I'd like to bring to the attention. First, I would have to say that I really do appreciate you being on the air and the way that you conduct yourself in your research is so refreshing.
Thank you.
With the 100-year anniversary coming up of The Birth of a Nation, the film, which actually is the first film that was shown in the White House when you had President Woodrow Wilson there, mm-hmm. I would like us to try to direct our attention towards that. It was March 21st, I think, 1915, when it was first shown, and we're coming up on that 100-year anniversary. That's one of my concerns. The other thing I like to...
But why is that a concern? Let's ask you.
I think it's kind of obvious in that because it was the first movie that was shown, silent film that was shown in the White House, I think it kind of set the tone for how the political system is perceived and executed throughout the United States over the years. And with it being the 100-year anniversary, I think we have to go back and try to analyze, see the impact, and see can we come up with different assessments.
Okay.
So the other issue I like to bring forth, I like Fukushima. I would like to have us to have some discussions directed towards that because I think that radiation fallout, when you have 3 nuclear power plants that have a core meltdown in Japan and have been polluting the Pacific realm and the food, and that the radiation is showing up on the West Coast now, I think we need to have a deeper analysis of how that is affecting us all and our food supply.
Well, actually, we did a 6-part series on Fukushima. And when I say we, actually, let me be very clear, it's Paul DiRienzo, a peer and colleague of mine.
who did a wonderful job. First, he started out with this site called Hanford Site, the Hanford Site in Washington State, mm-hmm. which is considered the largest environmental catastrophe in the United States, and it continues, even though this nuclear plant, which produced plutonium supply during the nuclear war years of the United States, the plant has been shut down. When I say plant, we have to understand that it's several thousand acres of land on the Columbia River up there. So he started there, but it, of course, he ballooned out into discussing the state of America's nuclear power system and the fragile state and the continuing catastrophe, environmental catastrophe. So it was a very, very good series. I urge you to go back to the archives. You can see leadstories.podbean.com or the PRN website, and you will see from about May into July.
Okay. One last thing before I get off, because I'm not trying to monopolize your time.
No.
I would like to share this book. I'm pretty sure maybe a lot of people have already read it, but it's very insightful. The title of the book is The Lost Symbol, and the author's name is Dan Brown.
The Lost Symbols?
Right.
The Lost Symbols?
The Lost Symbol, author Dan Brown. He's also the writer of The Da Vinci Code, and he has another very important book. It's fiction, but a lot of the information that he gives out in the book is historical and it's factual. So The Lost Symbol is very, very key, and I think it ties into, for me, the film The Birth of a Nation and how the power structure is set up within the Washington, D.C. area.
Well, let me ask you, Elijah, what's going on in North Carolina that concerns you?
Oh, man. Actually, right now, you know, the biggest thing in North Carolina is the national situation that's going on with the students that were up in Chapel Hill, the three, quote-unquote, Muslim students that were shot in the head by one of their neighbors. So that's gripped our state locally, because I'm kind of like in the UNC Chapel Hill area, and people are kind of like devastated because, you know, it hits close to home. But other than that, North Carolina is a beautiful state. Everything's kind of like laid back. We're dealing with cold temperatures, and that's about it.
What about this incident that is hitting close to home? The incident in which a white man shot and killed three Muslim people, two of them sisters, and one,
right,
the husband of one of the sisters. They were buried yesterday. About this is raising concern locally and for you?
Well, do you mind if I call you Miss Lead, or you want me to call you Treece?
You Treece.
Okay, absolutely. Well, two things. One, it shows you the frailty of life, that here you have three young people who were trying to seek an education, better themselves, and then you have an individual that we don't really understand what his motivations are or were. We can make speculations, and that's the thing that hits home for a lot of people, that the world is such today that you can just be going about your daily business and someone can come up and end your life. Much like the story that's taking place in Georgia that I'm following right now, where you had another student who went on Craigslist, tried to purchase an iPhone, and three guys robbed him. Now, everybody involved in that situation, they were people of color, they were black. And the three people that were arrested, they were black. So, you know, we have a situation where people are running around stating that black lives matter, but we have this situation where black-on-black crime is out of control. And so to bring it back to what happened to the three individuals who lost their lives in Chapel Hill, it's such a tragedy. It's so sad that, you know, as humans, we've come to this level where we have such a low disregard for life. And the fact that you tie that with what we just experienced with watching ISIS or ISIL have that Jordanian pilot in a cage, and they set him on fire. And so collectively, spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, we are all trying to wrap our minds around the chain of events that we are all experiencing as humans. And so it's very profound. I mean, people, you can see kind of like the shock on people's face that, hey, man, we're dealing with issues that we can have control over, but a lot of it is just out of our control. And it's sad.
What personally happened to you when you learned about this story?
Which story?
The murders of the three Muslims in Chapel Hill.
Well, in North Carolina, you know, there's a large Muslim population here. And you see how when they had to turn out for, when they had the funeral, they had to move it from the mosque, as I was following on the local news, they moved it from the mosque to a football field across the street. And it's galvanized their community because I know they probably feel a lot of pressure just being in the United States and the climate upon the planet right now and the whole world as far as how Muslims are being portrayed, how they're being perceived, and it's the misunderstanding and the confusion. And so, and you have to realize it's very important why I go back to the birth of a nation and that North Carolina is a Confederate state. So a lot of monuments throughout the state, just like when the individuals read the lost symbol, they will see the symbolism and the structures of a lot of the statues inside our nation's capital. They represent people who have a certain type of mindset about what power is, how you execute power, and how you maintain power. So there's a lot of different dynamics that are at play. Right now, looking to see how it's going to turn out. And hopefully, you know, because this is a side issue. I was just recently, and I thank you for allowing me to share this. I was just recently in Asheville. Actually, I was there for MLK's birthday. In the center of Asheville, they have a monument for a Confederate soldier. And I was there walking around. But then as I looked around, a big truck rolled past me, and there was a big Confederate flag on the back of the truck. And that was one flag. And on the other side of the truck, there was a flag that said, "Don't tread on me." And I'm like, wow, here I am, 2015, and this one, the things that, because I am an American citizen, born and raised, you have a right of freedom of speech. But I'm like, this is a part of the lexicon of my life in that here's an individual that's an open Confederate or, say, racist supporter, and he has the right to display and have his views, and he's doing it on MLK Day. And that's the climate here. You know, you have some people that if you're different and you don't seem to line up with what their ideology is, then they perceive you as a threat.
And what happens with threats when they perceive you as a threat?
Oh, you're subject to be attacked. See, there's another thing that's very, very important I think a lot of people aren't realizing, and that as black men, see, there's another thing that's going on in our country right now. Black men, there's so much pressure within the black community and among black men because you have story after story of police officers just actually, without even giving you the benefit of the doubt, just assuming that you're out doing something incorrect or wrong, and they just pull out their gun and shoot, ask questions later. So you have to be very cautious. And additionally with that, I think one last point I will leave with our audience, because I've been listening to your program now, I think, for about a year, year and a half maybe, and I love your analysis. I love the guests that call in to give me a different perspective, because as citizens, we have a right to be informed. We should be informed. That's our job as citizens, especially if you're voting. You have that responsibility. So when we look out and we see, I think we're going to have more situations like this because the economic pressure that's within our country right now, people not having the ability to have gainful employment, the jobs that have left the country. There's so much pressure. As a matter of fact, the prices that are going up in Walmart, you go into Walmart and you shop around, you see the things that you normally buy, it costs more to buy food. You see the the fracture lines taking place within our country.
Well, you have a very good handle on things, Elijah. Thank you so much, and welcome. I don't remember having heard from you. I think this is your first time I'm talking with you. And a warm welcome to you, and thank you for your thoughts today. I really appreciate that.
Listen, everybody, like I say, listen, take time out for yourself. Make sure you go to the gym. Your health is your number one asset. Keep yourself relaxed and calm, and do the things that bring joy and happiness into your life and to others. A lot of love. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
Well, thank you for that. We will have Elijah's wishes for Happy Valentine's also be my wish for Happy Valentine's Day. Thank you so much, Elijah, for your call. And thank you all for your calls today. Great stuff, and this is why I love this program, because people bring their best and they offer their best to us all. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. And certainly you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com and on Facebook, Lead Stories with Utrice Lead. Always a pleasure and a great, great privilege to be in your company. So we see you on Monday, and have yourselves a very, very good weekend, having freed your minds. Bye-bye.